welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, March 27th, 3 p.m. My name is Shona. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll talk to Theater and the Ref's Aaron Elmore about The Rivals, wonderful show. We'll talk with Erin Marin about Aaron's Law and her participation in Choose Respect March that happened today. Don Colden will be here to highlight Floyd Dryden's production of West Side Story that actually opens this weekend, and Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up, as she is every weekend, or every week, every Thursday. National Native News, coming up right now. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A district judge has ruled the Federal Trade Commission can sue tribal payday loan companies accused of deceptive practices. As Tristan Autone reports, this case involves AMG services operated by the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma.
According to the Federal Trade Commission, AMG Services is a payday lender that was disclosing loans as costing a certain amount and then charging people who took out loans a much greater amount. AMG said they were outside of Federal Trade Commission jurisdiction because they were tribally connected. However, a district judge ruled that those connections don't matter, that AMG deceived consumers, and that the company is accountable for that deception, tribal or not. Nikhil Singhvi is a staff attorney at the Federal Trade Commission.
I think the ruling is broadly applicable to any deceptive or unfair practice by any business that's in interstate commerce that claims to be run from a tribe. It's not restricted to payday lending. The FTC Act prohibits deceptive and unfair acts in interstate commerce broadly, and the fact that the company engaged in business is a tribal business or claims to be a tribal business is not going to exempt it from FTC jurisdiction.
The FTC says they will continue to pursue charges against AMG. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
The Associated Press reports Miami commissioners are expected to vote today on a plan to preserve and build around a Native American site. City officials, developers, and archaeologists agreed last week to preserve two sections of the site located in the downtown Florida city. Plans include surrounding the site in glass, where a hotel, movie theater, and restaurants are being built. The White House is seeking input from tribal leaders on climate change through a webinar series scheduled in April and May. Topics include disaster response and recovery and human health and community development. The webinars are to provide tribes an opportunity to give feedback to a task force, which will give recommendations to the government about climate change. People gathered in Bethel, Alaska recently to dance, celebrate, and heal. As KYUK's Ben Matheson reports, more than 20 dance groups participated in the Chamay Festival.
The recently revived Utmouthfoot group was back for the first time in 6 years. Ollie Alexi explained a crowd favorite. It's a song about the birds and the birds.
Yeah, generally that means it's a goose mating song. Boy and a girl come together, dancing together in face-to-face, and at the end they get together and they mate. That become a boyfriend and girlfriend.
One local group making a long-awaited return to Chamay was the group from Queefluk. They haven't performed at Chamay since 1990. Solomon Olick is from Queefluk.
And some of the emotions were changed because we forgot it. Watching the old DVD VHS tapes, we corrected our motions.
World-famous harmonica and fiddle duo Mike Stevens and Ray McLean put on a show. Stevens is from southern Canada. He's working to combat the epidemic of huffing. Stevens has gone out and simply given harmonicas to kids with huffing problems.
You don't know where it's going to end up. You don't know what's going to happen. But it only takes that one sort of spark or inspiration to help somebody figure out what they want to do or, you know, turn a corner.
In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
In March 2012, Colorado's governor and Southern Ute and Ute Mountain Ute tribes participated in a ceremony to permanently install their tribal flags in the state capitol. tribal and state leaders said it was a symbolic step in improving relationships. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. National Native News is made possible with support from Guest House Anchorage Inn. Wake up with the sun. On the web at guesthousealaska.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser, and I feel like I do have the best job on Thursdays in the world because I get to sit around and talk to amazing people in our community. Speaking of, Aaron Elmore from Theater in the Rough is here. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
So you're doing this funny show. It's called
yes.
The Rival.
Mm-hmm.
What's it about? What's
our second funny show of the season. The Rivals is about a young woman who's being wooed by four different men. One is too old for her. One is too country. The other is too rich. This young woman is very romantic.
Yes.
Lydia Languish is her name. She is romantic, but she also wants to be loved for who she is, not for the 30,000 pounds that she has in the bank.
Ah.
That's British pounds. So she is also in love with a guy she really thinks is awesome, but he is very poor. It turns out very shortly you find out that the really poor guy and the really rich guy are actually the same guy, so he's sort of pulling the wool over her eyes and pretending to be poor just so he can spend time with her. And when she finds out that they're really the same guy, then matters take a turn for him, poor man. But along the way, there's lots of other people rolling along. So it's a lot of fun. It's a comedy about romance.
Aw, so, everybody loves a good romantic
comedy. It's a Valentine, it really is. It's a Valentine we made for Juno, and we're really happy with it. It's a 200-year-old play. It was written by Richard Brinsley Sheridan back in 1775, I think. He was doing poorly as a lawyer, and so he decided he'd turn his hand to writing plays. And
that's
hilarious. It's amazing. The guy is really good. It's the first thing he ever did. Apparently, the play was about an hour longer than it is in the version that we have handed down to us, and he was forced to cut a bunch of things because it was just too much play. That happens. Anyway.
Because so it was a lawyer play first.
Yes, a lawyer play. He was a lawyer first. Wanted to make sure all the bases were covered and every single thing was drawn out. And then as we have worked through the play, we started out with a cutting of the original play. We didn't do everything because there are some there's some references, perhaps intended to be funny, that are 200 years old that will strike like lead on a modern audience's ear. And so rather than making people feel like they're not really up on those things, we just let those go. And then we got ourselves into a situation where we were getting ready to preview the play. This is a couple of weeks back now. And as we're getting ready to go into our final weekend, it's fun now to reflect back on this. When we were in previews for this, we actually found that we had too much play. We had two beginnings and two endings, which is one too many of each, if you think about it. So as we approached this, we realized that we had a very exciting and fun and amazing beginning. And it was better than the one that was actually starting the play. So we took the one that we'd created from scratch, which was sort of an overture set to music with people moving around and giving an idea of the relationships. And we threw that over the back wall, and we moved this song to the beginning. When I got interested in directing this piece, and I think that a huge reason why we're doing this piece is so that my dear Katie Jensen could play Mrs. Malaprop. Mrs. Malaprop, very famous role. She spends words she can't quite afford. a great example is commenting on her niece, Lydia, saying she's as headstrong as an allegory on the banks of the Nile.
Right.
She doesn't quite have. Yeah, so
love
that
it.
Kind of thing peppers through the whole thing. So that's a lot of fun. But when I got interested in directing this and got serious about it, I realized there are character moments that are happening within the context of the piece that just weren't quite landing in the way that I wanted to, and I wanted to make more of an explosion to happen at that one. And one particular one, a young woman, not our leading lady, but her best friend, is she dumps her guy because he's a jerk. He is jealous. He cannot believe that she really loves him, which is a problem lots of us have, that we don't really feel like we're quite as lovable maybe as we really are. And that's why we need people around us to convince us of it. So it was a wonderful character moment where she decides that she cannot marry him forever because he just can't get over this problem. And the original action within the script was to have her storm off stage in a storm of tears. And him to stand there on stage and do a speech to the audience telling about how bad he feels, and then he walks off, and then she comes back. And I thought structurally that was just very well. So I did a twist on it, and I decided I'd have him leave. He just got an earful from her. She just hollered at him. And so he goes, because he sees that he has to back away from this to cool down. And I thought, how can we go this one step further? And I'd long had this thought in my brain that perhaps music would aid us in this regard. And an old song that I'd enjoyed for many, many, many decades called Blue Champagne, which is a very romantic ballad about being alone in the middle of the night and there's nothing around to me. It's the sort of song you probably would write if you were a few sheets to the wind and feeling bad. Anyway, this song suddenly comes out of Julia in the midst of this. Well, in order to build character moments like that, we really needed two things. We needed to have somebody who could sort of choreograph and manage those kinds of moments, and that's certainly Katie's tremendous forte. She's sort of a sound designer, but she's also really a...
She's a dancer,
She's a dancer, of course, for many, many years, and she's also sort of a scorer in that way. She treats these like movies. And we also needed a live musician. We've been working for a couple of years now with Natalia Spengler, who's a young woman who's a very accomplished pianist, but she's not a talent of hers that we've had a chance to sort of showcase up to this point. We talked to her about it and see whether she wanted to put in all the extra effort that she would have had to do to make that happen. And she was willing, so we're very happy to say the result is that we're able to take some moments, particularly the opening moments of the play, this moment for Julia. There's a number of other ones that are incredibly rich character moments that suddenly just kind of flower open because we're able to provide this beautiful live music. And they come within the context of the storytelling, and they are sort of staged and choreographed in a way that really illuminates what's going on inside the characters' lives.
Wow. I've talked to a bunch of people, and they're just like, the music. They just are overwhelmed.
It's great. I mean, it's not a musical. There was, of course, in the 30s, I think, like when they were writing musicals of everything, somebody wrote a musical to this, which is, I haven't heard it. I'm not really that interested in it. What we found is it's just a sort of an unavoidable, any good design choice, once it gets made, it's almost as though the design choice was waiting there for you to trip over. And you can't really veer away from it. You just have to fall down and see what comes from it. And what we found has come from this wonderful kind of illumination of this thing.
Oh, that's very, very cool.
Yeah.
So can you talk about who's in the cast real quick?
Yes. Well, Katie Jensen, as I mentioned, playing Mrs. Malaprop, is probably the most famous role of the character of Mrs. Malaprop, which, of course, is sort of a shortened version of malapropos, right? So that humor name brought us the word malapropism, which is what term we'd use for anybody who gets into a situation where they're in over their head linguistically. She's playing that role and doing an absolutely stupendous job of it. It's just incredible. We have a number of other returning performers. Natalia, as I mentioned, has been with us a number of years now, and she's playing the keyboards as well as playing, as a friend of mine pointed out, all of the working class characters in the play. It's kind of sad to say, but looking at her from that situation. But yeah, it works out well that in a certain way she's sort of illuminating the story with the music, and so it made sense that this sort of ultimate servant who knows what the characters need before they actually know they need it themselves. She's able to sort of make that happen, and it's kind of a marvelous tour de force for her. Zeb Bodine, who has been in a number of shows now, still no Shakespeare, as he pointed out to me the other day, is back playing a character of Bob Akers, the one who's just too country for Lydia.
Nice.
Is wonderful and does a spectacular job. Wonderful singing voice as well. Phil Schempf is playing Sir Lucius of Trigger, a tall Irishman. Phil's very good playing people who are tall. And he's playing the guy who really the guy who's a bit on the old side for Lydia. My own self, I am sort of cast opposite Katie in the parental role, although my kid is the leading man in the story. Jack Absolute is his name, Captain Jack Absolute. being played by Jeremy Kotler, who's on board as an intern at Perseverance Theater right now, so we're able to monopolize on his talents. He came in audition for us. We thought he was fantastic, so we're very happy to have him. And he is opposite Sophie Lager, who's playing Lydia Languish.
Oh, great.
Katie's, Mrs. Malaprop's niece. Sophie was in a play of ours a number of years ago now, Comedy of Errors. We haven't had a chance to work with her since, so we're very happy to have her back. Hadassah Nelson was in Equivocation, and actually stage managed our last production, Ladies of the Camellias. She's doing a fantastic job as Julia. And she is opposite another new fish, Andrew Madsen, who's new to town, getting his residency so he can go to UAS, which is really tremendous. So he's come in to help us out playing another one of the young lovers, and they're all doing a fantastic job.
That sounds like a great cast.
Yeah.
Yeah, so speaking of cast, because, you know, you all do two shows, typically a season, a fall mm-hmm. show and a spring show.
That's right.
I was wondering for, you know, for those people who are new to town or for those people just maybe don't remember, could you talk a little bit about just Theater in the Rough as an organization and, you know, because you all have a lot going on and have for many years.
It's a nonprofit corporation, so it's, you know, it's essentially owned by everybody. It's one of those situations. Katie and I have been founded it and been managing it and co-artistic directing it now 23 years, which is a tremendous accomplishment to even reflect on, which means we're coming up on our 25th anniversary. We'll have to think of something really spectacular to do at that point. But we started it 23 years ago with a show for just the two of us. We did a production of Tally's Folly, which is a cast of two. We got Mike Peterson in to direct. And we played to a house of six people on opening night of Halloween. We've never opened on Halloween since. Seems like a bad idea. The size of the house, of course, never really matters. But when you have when you have a few more people than are actually on stage, that always feels like you're multiplying your effect. And that was good. So we had six. That was good.
Hey,
anyway,
like
so
three times as much.
Burgeoned from there. That's right. So we've been doing about two shows a year ever since. We haven't gotten it around to every single year. We have day jobs, all of us, all the actors. We're at present, anyway, an entirely volunteer organization from top to bottom. And that brings us to need to do things. It adjusts our priorities in certain ways. And we do have, I suppose, if you've seen more than one show of ours over more than 1 year, would say that our shows have a sort of a look to them, and I suppose that might be that you see that same shirt come back 10 times, you see Eddie Jones reappear in the same pair of trousers 4 times in a row, and that's partly because of...
those trousers fit him.
Those trousers fit him, like that. And it's a question of expedience as well. I sort of treat the costumes for Theater in the Rough as sort of like a giant wardrobe. You have a couple of signature pieces that are really fantastic. You get a lot of really useful, hardworking neutrals that are kind of, going to go and go and go. And then some things that are really spectacular. And then, of course, every once in a while, you will play with a king and a queen, and so you dress them. You make new costumes for them. But in the next show, those new costumes will be on somebody who's not as important, and they sort of go down the drain of worn usability. Time goes by, and our sets do tend to be kind of minimal, so we don't have anywhere to store extra bits, and we don't really have anywhere to build them either. So we do tend to put up a curtain and dance around in front of it. But of course, the huge event that kind of redefined us almost 8 years ago now, in 2006, about 95% of our gear, which was stored in McPheeters Hall, burned away with the church and the hall and the house next door, and the fire due to arson. And we're happy to say that after only about 3 years, we're back there. We're very happy to be in the Elks Hall for the whole time we were on the road. Did some wonderful work there, but now we've... the theater space we work in is quite small again, but it's McPheeters Hall. It has a stage. It's got the lighting system we dreamed of and all the things we need. And it's a fantastic place to work and a wonderful place to watch your show because visibility to the stage is you're never any more than about 30 feet away.
It's so intimate.
Yeah,
it's
very intimate. And it was wonderful, actually, to get that response because we get used to working there. And you get somebody like Jeremy, who's coming from far-flung lands, who comes in here and he comes out there for his first night and say, oh my gosh, you know, there's people like 5 feet away from him sitting a little bit lower than he is, but not much. It's like, wow, they're right there. And then as players, of course, that keeps you very, very engaged. And as an audience person, it keeps you very much part of the action. And it's theater is a thing as I've discovered over the years, theater's a thing that doesn't happen just on stage. And neither, really, does it happen simply in the minds of the people who watch, because although every single person who comes and watches a play carries away some slightly different remembrance of what happened, the events, the whole experience is something slightly other than both of those things, and something slightly larger and better and more fantastic than either of those two things. And it's, of course, based entirely on this mutual agreement that what happens here, although it's not real, it's true. So, and that's a tremendous thing to be a part of.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Aaron Elmore of Theater in the Rough and director of The Rivals, such a pleasure. I was hoping that you could tell us, actually, we didn't ever talk about dates and times. I guess we should do that.
Well, yes, we do have this one last weekend. You can get a chance to come see The Rivals, and there are still tickets left. But we the room tonight, please, Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night at 7:30. And then we have one closing matinee at 2 o'clock on Sunday.
And where can people get tickets?
You can get them tickets just about everywhere now. They're in all the bookstores. You can get them at the door. You can get them online at our website, theaterintherough.org. And I think they're in the Jack as well. So.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a funny show. You should definitely go check
it out.
It's
very funny, yeah.
Oh. Well, thank you so much. And
thank you.
Best of Brick Lake in your closing weekend.
Thank you.
All right, and such amazing work people do here in this community. It's so great. And speaking of amazing work, we're going to hear a little bit of Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 27th of March, 2014. It's the birthday of the French novelist Henri Murger, born in Paris, 1822, famous for his book Scènes de la vie bohème, a fictionalized account of his own experiences as an impoverished writer living in the Latin Quarter, Paris's left bank. It became the basis for Puccini's opera La Bohème, with the character of Rudolfo, based on Murger himself. It was on this date, 1998, the Food and Drug Administration approved the drug Viagra, made by Pfizer, which was originally studied as a treatment for high blood pressure and chest pain, and then was found to be helpful in treating male impotence. By 2001, Pfizer was selling $1 billion worth of the little blue pills a year. It's still one of the biggest selling drugs Pfizer has ever produced. And Viagra has been found to be useful in other ways, too. It extends the life of cut flowers, keeping them from drooping for more than a week, and it's been shown to help hamsters recover from jet lag. And it was on this date, 1915, the woman known as Typhoid Mary was put into quarantine in the Bronx in New York. Her name was Mary Mallon. She worked as a cook in various wealthy households around New York City, and every household where she worked seemed to come down with typhoid fever. A doctor noticed this pattern of outbreaks among the wealthy. He figured they had all hired the same cook, finally tracked her down, questioned her. She did not take it well, especially when he asked her to provide a stool sample. She threatened him with a meat cleaver, but he had her arrested. They got the stool samples and discovered that she was a healthy carrier of typhoid. They made her promise to give up working as a cook. She broke the promise. 5 years later, they finally tracked her down, and she was put in quarantine for the rest of her life. Here's a poem for today by Dana Gioia, entitled Words. The world does not need words. It articulates itself in sunlight, leaves, and shadows. The stones on the path are no less real for lying uncatalogued and uncounted. The fluent leaves speak only the dialect of pure being. The kiss is still fully itself, though no words were spoken. And one word transforms it into something less or other, illicit, chaste, perfunctory, conjugal, covert. Even calling it a kiss betrays the fluster of hands glancing the skin or gripping a shoulder, the slow arching of neck or knee, the silent touching of tongues. Yet the stones remain less real to those who cannot name them, or read the mute syllables graven in silica. To see a red stone is less than seeing it as jasper, metamorphic quartz, cousin to the flint, the Kiowa, carved as arrowheads. To name is to know and remember. The sunlight needs no praise, piercing the rain clouds, painting the rocks and leaves with light, then dissolving each lucent droplet back into the clouds that engendered it. The daylight needs no praise, and so we praise it always, greater than ourselves and all the airy words we summon. Pabadena Joya Words from Interrogations at Noon, published by Grey Wolf Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And it's Juno afternoon, Thursday, March 27th. And in the studio with me, I have Erin Marin, and she's here in town to talk about actually a new bill called the Erin's Law. Hi, welcome to the studio.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. So could you tell me and the listening audience just a little bit about what is this bill?
This bill requires age-appropriate sexual abuse curriculum taught to kids in public schools. So basically empowering kids and educating adults in the schools on how to speak up and tell if you're being abused. Because, you know, without it, the only message kids are getting is from their perpetrators to keep this a secret, don't tell anyone. Because often your parents are not talking about this with their kids, they're just covering stranger danger. But 93% of the time, kids are being abused by someone they know and trust.
That's interesting. Is that a stranger danger? Can you talk a little bit about what that means?
Yeah, stranger danger. We're so often in the schools, we're teaching kids not to look for the lost puppy, not to take candy from the stranger. But in reality, it's not the strangers you need to be worried about with your children. Yes, that's the stories the media, you know, covers. But in reality, often kids know who their perpetrator is. It's somebody they often you trust with your children. So I don't want parents to be afraid that, you know, you can't trust your kids with anybody. But we also need to, you know, arm kids with the ability to speak up and tell and know the difference between a safe touch, unsafe touch, safe secret, unsafe secret, how to tell a trusted adult and to keep telling until abuse ends.
And how did you get involved with this type of work?
I got involved with this type of work because of my own personal experience. I was abused from a neighbor from 6 to 8 years old. I moved only to get that much closer to my next perpetrator, a family member that lived down the street, who abused me from ages 11 to 13. These weren't the strangers that I had been told about and warned about. These were people I knew and trusted. And so I ended up realizing later on in life that the one message I didn't get in school was on how to speak up and tell. I spent 6 weeks knowing DARE in sixth grade, all on the 8 ways to say no to drugs, but where were the 8 ways on how to get away and how to tell today? We teach kids bully intervention. Well, for teaching kids if you're being physically abused on the school bus by your peers, why aren't we teaching kids if you're being sexually abused in the home to tell a trusted adult? Because without it, these kids will continue to be repeatedly sexually abused the way I was for 6.5 years and not come forward until later on in life.
Right. And so as far as, you know, curriculum, like you said, putting it in the schools, are you talking middle schools, elementary schools?
Pre-K to 12th grade is my mission. We need to give the little ones a voice and we need to give the older ones a voice. No age is too young. Like, I will start teaching my children as young as 2 years old on personal body safety. Empowering kids that the areas that are covered by your swimsuit, that you tell somebody if somebody ever touches you in those areas. Those are areas that nobody should ever touch you, and if somebody does, you speak up and tell.
Hmm. And so you are going to every state. You've kind of have a whirlwind
yes.
mission there.
Yes, my law has been passed now. Today, Tennessee passed it, and I was there 3 weeks ago testifying at the Capitol. 12 states have currently passed the law, and there are 26 more that are currently voting on it, and Alaska is one of those states. And I know how powerful my message is to legislators to drive this home, and I'm willing to travel to every capital to protect and give kids a voice and put these sex offenders out of business.
Yeah. So, and, you know, the listening audience can't actually see this, but you are traveling with child, too.
Yes, yes. I am 6 months pregnant, and I'm not letting this little one slow me down. And, you know, life is definitely going to change here in a few months, so I'm trying to get as much done on this law as possible before this little bundle of joy comes.
Nice. And it's actually probably, I mean, because you're going to have this personal experience with your own child, and so I'm sure the bill becomes that much more important.
Definitely. Now that, you know, it's not just about, you know, everyone else's child, I'm going to have my own child in this world. It's definitely, you know, very important to me becoming a parent to, you know, empower kids. And, you know, I wish we can get every parent to have this discussion with their kids, but unfortunately, parents just assume, oh, my kid would tell me. My kid wouldn't keep this a secret. They don't realize the power and control of what these sex offenders can do to children.
Right. And so as far as things that people in our community can do, what can we do to can we let our legislators know that how we feel
yes.
about it?
What I'm testifying at 8 a.m. on Friday morning on this bill, and basically, it's House Bill 233, and what I'm asking the people of Alaska to do is to call and write your representatives and your senators to support House Bill 233. You know, pick up the phones. Let them know that you support this bill and that you want them to pass it and give kids a voice in Alaska. Let's make Alaska the 13th state to pass this law.
Is there a place where people can go to get more information? Is there a website that I have?
Yes, they can learn more about what I'm doing at Erin Marin. ErinMerryn.net or erinslaw.org, and I also have a personal Erin's Law Facebook page.
Oh, great. So people can get more information.
More information, correct.
Fabulous. And what are you, so you're talking to legislators in Juneau?
Yes, I'm talking to legislators on the bill, have different meetings. I just finished the march here on Choose Respect, and, you know, really trying to reach as many people as I can while I'm in Alaska to emphasize the importance on this bill.
Yeah, and it seems like for so many young people, because before we came on air, we were talking a little bit, and it's not just girls, too. I think that people think that girls are kind of the main victim, but to even give voices to boys who, you know, feel the...
Yes, 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually abused by the age of 18. So this doesn't exclude boys. This happens to boys. Look what Jerry Sandusky did to multiple boys. These kids are sitting in our classrooms when you look at those statistics. And as I tell teachers, you're looking at these children, you just don't realize that this is happening.
Yeah. So the House bill again is what number?
House Bill 233. And it'll be heard tomorrow, Friday morning at 8 a.m.
Great. Well, Erin, thank you so much and for coming on and talking to us about Erin's Law. You can check more information on it. It's erinslaw.org.
Yep.
Great. And then erinmerryn.net, and that's erinmerryn.net for more information on House Bill 233. Well, what states are you at next?
Next states I travel to are Ohio, Rhode Island, California, and Louisiana are the next states that have been asking come testify and help get this passed in their state that are hearing it before they run out of time in session.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Anything else you want to tell us before you leave?
No, I just hope parents that are listening will see the importance of this. And before we start educating your kids in the schools, maybe you should have that conversation tonight with your kids.
Thank you so much, Erin, and best of luck in getting House Bill 233 passed here in Alaska.
Thank you so much for having me.
My adorable friends, can you keep a secret?
I pack for secrets.
No, I won't tell you.
What?
The poor girl is out of her mind.
I am crazy.
She might be a that. She looks somehow different. I do.
And I think she is up to something.
I am. I do. I am. She talks like a parrot.
What is going on with you, Maria?
I feel pretty, oh so pretty. I feel pretty and witty and gay. And I pity any girl who's in need today. I feel charming, oh so charming.
And that is a very, very popular song from West Side Story, opening this weekend here in Juneau. And in the studio with me right now, I have three young sharks and jets in the studio. I have Ivan Williams, Karsten Sierra, and Christopher Lujan. Welcome to the studio, guys.
Thank you.
Hello.
Yeah, so, wow, you guys are doing West Side Story. That is no small task.
It's not.
Yeah.
No, very difficult.
Well, why, Chris? Why is it difficult?
It's difficult because we've been working on it so long, and you'd think that as you go, it would get easier, but sometimes it can get harder. It's fun to just work all the time, so that's why many reasons.
So, Ivan, what do you think about kind of the challenges of doing a classical musical like this?
Hitting the notes, singing-wise, just it's hard because originally the music was made for opera singers, and so you have to sing like an opera singer, sort of, or at least hit the notes like an opera singer. So it's very hard.
Well, it's funny because Dawn Colden is your director, yeah?
Yeah.
So she, when she thinks about plays for young people, I've worked with Dawn a few times, and she doesn't really think about, young people need to do this kind of play. She really thinks about young people can do any play and then picks the hardest one.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. So, Karsten, what's the process, rehearsal process been like for you?
Oh, well, it started out hour-long rehearsals, and then a few months later it'd go to two-hour rehearsals, and then now we're doing six-hour rehearsals after school, so it's very tiring.
And is this your first, let's kind of go down the line, is this your first production you've ever been in?
No, I've been in two. This is my second.
So what else did you do?
Oliver also with Dawn.
Oh, cool.
Last year.
Oh, great. Great. What about you?
Yeah, I've been in two. Last year, Oliver, two with Dawn.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is my third production with Floyd Dryden Middle School. I was in Aladdin with Miss Barbara. We did Oliver last year with Miss Dawn, and now we're doing West Side Story, so this is my third one.
That's pretty cool that, because not a lot of middle schools actually have theater departments or like theater programs or really do musicals at this scale. What do you think about it?
I think this is a very, like I said earlier, challenging task. So I understand why some schools may not have a theater department to do this. But I think with the right director like Miss Dawn and kids who at first may be strangers, by the end were like a big family, it just gets easier as you go.
Can you also tell me about, because isn't there a fabulous music teacher behind this?
Yes.
Miss Smythe.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah, she's no slouch, that Miss Smythe.
No.
Very high expectations for us.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very cool. So what characters do you play?
I play Bernardo, which is the leader of the Sharks.
Oh, you're the leader of the Sharks.
Yes.
Ooh, cool. What about you?
And I play Chino. I'm the second in command for the Sharks. So.
Oh, so you guys are like in cahoots, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then I'm all alone over here, and I'm Riff. I'm the only Jet today.
Yeah.
I lead the Jets.
I'm waiting for a fight to break out in the studio.
No.
No, definitely not.
So speaking of fighting, actually, Ms. Dawn, the director, was telling me that you guys do some pretty cool knife fights.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It has to be, like, very choreographed otherwise, because we don't want anything to go wrong at all. Because we're just, like, very choreographed about
cautious.
That.
Cautious.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about that, if you wouldn't mind, Karsten, just about how that works as far as when you work on the blocking or the movement of the piece with a weapon.
Well, I'm kind of behind them while they're, like, challenging each other to fight, but it looks pretty challenging I'm cautious, too, when I see them swinging around.
So do you get the moves and that kind of thing, or you know, like, does she teach you the moves and it's like choreographed like a dance? Yeah.
No, it's not like the movie how they did dance fighting, because you know, obviously we're not ballet dancers, so we kind of have to make it real, not in a dance. So.
Oh, got it. And what kinds of, are they dull knives, or how does that work?
They're butter knives.
Yeah.
Wrapped in a nice grip with, like, mine's leather, and then yeah. Bernardo and...
Leather, too.
It's like it's almost like a plastic dip type. It feels mm-hmm. rough, but yeah. I like my knife. It's very leathery.
So after you threaten each other, you could go, like, butter some toast?
Yeah.
Yes.
We had a
toaster. We are dead, so... Yes. You have time.
Nice. So how many students are in this production?
30.
About 30.
So it's 30 Floyd Dryden middle school students.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. 6th to 8th grade. And actually, it's shocking because there's only 3, counting myself, who've been in all 3 Floyd Dryden productions as an 8th grader. Since I'm an 8th grader, there's only 3 people, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is great. So do you guys think that you'll do more productions in the future? Do you
feel yes.
That?
Yeah.
Yes.
I really want to.
Me too.
Yeah. So. We've gotten the theater bug a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So when is this? Can you tell me when this production is?
Friday, it's at 7 p.m. at the Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium. That's where all the shows are. Saturday, it's also at 7 p.m. And on Sunday, it's at 2 p.m.
So you only have 1 weekend to catch this particular show, right?
Yes.
Oh, wow. So how does it feel like to do so much work, and then you're like, oh, it's 1 weekend?
Yeah, well, it's like, yeah, it's a whole bunch of work, and then in the period of 4 days, it's over.
Yeah.
But it's so fun to just do it. All that time worked for just a few nights.
I think in the end, it's the feeling that counts, that how you've bonded with your friends. Now they're like family just because you've been with them. This play is, what, 4 or 3 months in the making? So mm-hmm. Now we get to bond a lot. So all leading up to 1 very important weekend.
That's pretty cool. I heard, well, I know the story, of course, of West Side Story. I mean, who doesn't really? But I heard there's some kissing. I know another student in the production. And how do middle school kids just freak out when they have to kiss on stage?
I don't think that this particular person did.
No, person, I don't think they did.
Because this very particular person is very open, and he doesn't care. He's just one of those people who works so hard. This is Trevor Pierce. He's an amazing actor.
Amazing singer, too.
He just goes for it.
Right. What about the Maria? Because, you know, it doesn't just take one, right?
Yeah.
I hear she's a really great actress. What's her name?
Cassidy Peets.
Okay. Great. Great. So what would you say, and we'll just kind of go down the line, what would you say is the most important thing that you've learned, or the most special thing that you've learned through this process?
To never get discouraged while you're making a play. Just don't give up. Just keep going. Because once you give up, your whole, like, energy and the way you play your character just gives out, and it's not the same how they look at you. Like, if you mess up and you leave the stage, and when you come back on, you're all sad and you're mad, it won't be the same. Just get over it, and, you know, you always have the next chance of proving yourself.
Kristen, what about you?
I think that Don really, really wants us to focus. So we've just learned, that's like my favorite thing to learn, stay focused, focus. Just keep focusing.
It's a really great life lesson, too, actually.
I think the most important thing is probably be professional, even if you mess up. Miss Dawn drills this into our head. Like, especially, we try not to worry about messing up, because it just kind of helps us mess up, which we really don't want to do. So I think we just have to be professional. If something happens like that, the show must go on. We have to just kind of cope with that. And we're not, unlike some other middle school students, we try not to be, like, real rowdy, and we try to be professional in this play.
You know, what's interesting is that 99% of the time, the audience has no idea you messed up anyway.
I know, that's crazy.
Yeah.
No, they think it's all part of the action. It's pretty great that way.
Yeah.
So could you tell us the times and dates one more time? And then also, are tickets available just at the door, or can you get them other places?
Yes, tickets are available at the door, and the times are, again, Friday at 7, Saturday at 7, and Sunday at 2. At the Thunder Mountain Auditorium.
Very cool. And you had two shows today, right?
Did
you do some student
we did
money?
Some school shows today.
How are the school audiences?
They liked the falling and death and that stuff.
Yeah.
I think...
Especially ghosts.
Yeah.
I think it was really crazy the first show because there was like a little bit of a mix-up trying to get on the bus getting there. Like, we were just sitting in the foyer of our school like, hey, why is the audience beating us to the place? So we were like, okay, let's go now. And when we finally got there, it was like, okay, change, okay, let's get this going. And we did the show. I think we could have done better. It was not bad, but it was not good. It was a mixed medium. But the second school show, we were much more focused. We had kind of gotten the practice down, and
I think we calmed down more in the second one.
Yeah,
because you'd gotten one show under your belt, so that's
yeah.
Well, cool. Hey, guys, Ivan Williams, Carson Sierra, Christopher Lujan, thanks so much for coming to the studio and talking about this fabulous show. And break a leg.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I want to tell you about another fabulous show actually happening tonight. It's Harrison B. with Alaska Originals. He's doing a live television broadcast recording here at 360 North, and that starts at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. You should definitely check that out. It's being filmed for TV, and it's going to be pretty cool. And here's a little track off of one of his albums. This is Harrison B.
In this rain, sometimes I know I said what it was. She drive you crazy, and I struggle and close. Cause you my baby. Come with me, deep, and let the sun shine down on me. Roots and leaves, so that's you and that's me. And the sun to shine, tumble down on me. Oh, yeah, and let the sun. And let the sun move, and we'll be taken through the heavens, toast into the night, talking forever on a Saturday. You let the sun shine, baby, tumble down on me. Oh, you let the sun shine, baby, tumble down on me. And we can run. All the weather, but we two trees in the rain, and we two birds of a feather till we follow far away from all the tears of today. Sometimes I know what's up, but it was to drive you crazy, and I struggle and close, cause you my baby, come with me, deep, and let the sun.
And welcome to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona, and it is Thursday, March 27th. And in the studio with me, always having me chuckle it up, the one, the only, Ms. Nancy DeCherney here with Arts Up. Hey.
Hey, we got lots to talk about. You've already talked about that this is the last weekend for all the theater, right?
We talked about Rivals, and then it's the only weekend for West Side Story.
And Perseverance Theater ends.
Got on a Hot Tin Roof the last weekend.
Right, so if you haven't seen these, you must.
Yeah.
I have to say, you must.
They're all good.
They're really, really good. I've seen them all, and I have thoroughly enjoyed them all. Okay, enough about that.
Okay.
All right. This weekend is the Education of Young Children's having big conference here. So there's all kinds of things going on over at Centennial Hall that you might want to get involved in. There's little projects for families and stuff like that. So let's see. The Juno Explorers, Museums and Exhibition Spaces. That might be happening. There's a STEM after-school workshop over at the Juno Economic Development thing on Friday at 4.
I love those STEM things. I think they're so cool.
Yeah, and we're working on them to be STEAM things, of course, but that'll happen. All weekend long, the University Technical Ed Center is having a whole bunch of workshops on, like I would have probably thought they would do this in the fall, but it's all on insulation and air leakage and sealing. It's a whole series of them, one or two each day. And so if you've been like they end with how to choose a contractor. But if you're into some construction stuff right now, you might want to give them a call and get the whole list. The whole list is on our website, but there's a bunch of stuff. 6:30 and 8 p.m. on Friday, the Fireside Lecture Series out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center is on a salmon forest. They have a new exhibit for that they've set up. So, and that's free. Like I
think
said.
It might want to be their last one of the season before...
Before the season.
Before the season.
Before spawning begins.
The other season, yeah. The return.
Yeah, the return. Anyway, but it's free and it's a really enjoyable evening event. It's 6:30 or 8. There's dancing, a Latin swing and ballroom at, who typed this? There is a bad spelling. The Alaska Club in the Valley. There's a lot of dance this weekend, actually. Let's see, at 7 p.m., The Spirit of John Muir with Lee Stetson is happening at the Juno Public Library. This is offered by the Library, the Sierra Club, and the U.S. Forest Service in celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act.
Oh, cool. That's actually not dancing.
That's not dancing, but we'll get to the dancing. You may want to dance later.
I was like, there's dancing at the library?
Yeah, well, there could be.
John Muir?
Yeah. Okay, and the UAS Sound and Motion series at 7 p.m. is really fun. Treasures from the State Film Library. They dig out all these cool things, old film that nobody's seen for a while. And I think in celebration or whatever of the earthquake, they're going to show some film footage from that. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, very fun. That's all free, and that's at 7 o'clock out at the U.S. Egan Library. And then you could talk about insulation, for example.
You know, it all comes around, really.
At 9 p.m., there is a Spring Fling, KXLL, fundraiser for the Taylor White Foundation. This is for high school students only. You have to have a valid ID to get in. Yes, that's happening over at the Jack. There's DJ Goldrich and Blaine. It's $5, so come on in.
That's so cool because there's just not a whole lot of options for high schoolers around here, to get out and do stuff, you know?
I guess not.
Yeah, so it's very cool.
Yeah, it's very nice, and thanks to KXLL for organizing that. Scorcher Invades the Valley, McGivney's Sports Bar and Grill, is having Scorcher from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. And Gold Town's showing Antarctica, A Year on the Ice. This is their schedule is random, so go check their website. Heating in hot water. See what I tell you? You can learn about all these weird things. This is also the season where people start worrying about where their kid is going to go to school next fall. So there's starting to be open houses for the different programs. On Saturday, the Juno Montessori Borealis parent info meeting, they're having that. The school has a whole list of all of the ones, and we have them on our website. But if your kid is entering kindergarten, registration is starting to open, and you want to know about that. So we're changing to a new school. 10 to 2 p.m., there's the annual Spring Jamboree out at the Saga Eagle Valley Center. All sorts of activities, free hot dogs, whatnot. And if you don't want to drive out to Eagle out to the Eagle Valley Center, there is the first annual Spring Fling Craft Fair, which is a fundraising event for the food bank and Relay for Life. So bring a dollar or bring something for the food bank, and there's going to be vendors and craft people there. And
where's that?
That's at the Jack.
Oh,
cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. Let's see. Sounds of the Capital City. There's an adult music thing going on at the Canvas. A Weekend with Pablo Picasso, which is a staged reading. You want to say his name because I'll get it wrong.
Herbert Seguenza.
Yes, he's been playing Big Daddy in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Fabulous actor. And he wrote
Nancy.
This?
He did. I think so.
Anyway, so this is he did it a little bit earlier, and at 2 p.m. on Saturday at Perseverance Theater. It's a pay-as-you-can thing, a great opportunity.
You know,
to
it's
see
a huge opportunity. This guy's a tour de force.
He's an amazing person. Wonderful actor. Comic drawing over at Alaska Robotics. Study about doors and windows over at the UAS Tech Center. See what I tell you. It's a lot. Okay, Equinox Barn Dance featuring the Taku Gales. I don't know if I believe that one. I didn't type it, so I don't believe it. Scandinavian Dance with Lee Otterholt is live music by Dale Wygant. This is being offered by the Sons of Norway, and that's over at the Filipino Hall on Friday night at 7:30. On Sunday, you can study about ice dams in your building.
Oh, ice dams in your building. Got it.
Yeah, there's the weekly ukulele jam over at TK McGuire's in the morning. Let's see, and the two matinees for Theater in the Rough and Perseverance and West Side Story. That's three. I can't count. Okay. Music on the Fly featuring 5 O'Clock Charlie is happening out. I don't think that's true either. Who wrote this? I did. Sorry. There's a blues fusion night happening at the Alaskan. On Monday night, Monday is Seward's Day. It's a holiday for some folks. And it's the deadline to submit your astronomy photos for Marie Drake Planetarium's awesome Alaskan astronomy presentation. So they're looking for anything, humor, photos, whatever you got. So it's also PFD filing deadline.
Monday?
Yeah.
You know, at Arts Up, we really take care of the whole person.
Well, we like to do the PFD thing because that's the pick, click, gig thing, and you can help support most arts groups. Don't be surprised that the Arts Council is not there. We fall into this little dead zone that PFD has that doesn't allow certain groups, and we're one of them. But that doesn't mean we're not nice people and don't deserve your funding. So there.
Huh.
Yeah, they're trying to fix that. HB 35, Senator or Representative Seaton is working on that for us.
Oh, good.
Anyway, there is a Seward's Day Pancake Breakfast, which is a fundraiser for the Senior Nutrition Program over at the Senior Center from 9 to 11.
Are they going to be healthy pancakes?
What?
Are they going to be healthy? Like whole grain or something like that? Because
I bet they have maple syrup on them. Come on, Shona.
I know.
Okay, at 5 o'clock on Monday, it's an arts roundtable, and this is one that I hope a lot of people will come to. The McDowell Group is working on the Juneau Economic Plan, and they want to particularly talk to people who are involved in the arts about the importance of the arts in the economy in Juneau, and what they're going to take this plan to the city assembly to help them plan budgets in the future. And so they really are looking forward for what are things that the city could invest in the arts that could build the economy. And I think I'd really like to hear from a lot of the arts people. So please come. That's at 5 p.m. on Monday at the Jack. Let's see, there's a drawing class with Jackie Manning at 7. And there's a series of 4 weeks that you do charcoal portraiture with Jackie at the Canvas. The Tuesday, it starts to be all those horrible high school graduation qualifying exam things. So it's a lot of testing. There's also a really interesting class at called Ceramics Libation Class with Brandon Howard at the Canvas. It's going to be making steins and things to drink things out of. So that's also a four-week thing. Let's see, Native Issues Forum on Wednesday. Central Council offers this. Chris McNeil will be the speaker. That's a $10 lunch. That's at the Jack and Mud Rooms. Theme is Deception, music by Wool Pullers, and that's over at the Northern Light United Church. $7 goes to Big Brothers and Big Sisters. So there you have it. Busy.
As always.
Yeah, and fun. Lots of really interesting things to do.
That's right. And Folk Fest is right around the corner, speaking of
March. You can tell that because the crocus are up.
Yay. Yay.
Or is it croci?
Croci.
Yes, thank
bless you. you can find all this information where, Nancy?
On the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, jahc.org or ktoo.org.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And this is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ok Bay area, tune to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at ktoo.org. Thanks so much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. Same time tomorrow, 3 p.m. on Friday.
PR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. Measures promising aid to Ukraine and sanctions for Russia easily passed both the House and Senate today. CNPR's Dave.